Hello, I am Bob Vessels and I am from the Netherlands. In my podcast, Rembrandt's Money, I will be telling you unexpected stories about Rembrandt, the famous Dutch painter. Compelling and fascinating stories. Hardly about art, no, about his almost unknown life as an entrepreneur, about Rembrandt's business, his finances and his legal affairs. In 2024, I am planning 24 podcast episodes, so around every 14 days. Every episode is between some 15 to 25 minutes, and all for free. If you want to know more, please visit my website www.rembrandtsmoney.com. Welcome or welcome back. In the early 1630s, Rembrandt worked closely with art dealer Hendrik Uilenburg. In his first years in Amsterdam, Uilenburg's extensive network had a significant impact on Rembrandt's professional and his personal life. Today, I will have a look at Rembrandt's profession in this period. Rembrandt's personal life will be the subject in a next episode of this podcast. There, I'll also talk about Rembrandt's marriage to Saskia van Uilenburg, a cousin of the art dealer. Rembrandt was very productive during the Uilenburg period. The period was between 1631 and 1635. Figures vary, but he painted at least 50 portraits, an average of one per month. At the same time, Rembrandt became acquainted with a large circle of Uilenburg's contacts. Through them, he acquired powerful and important customers or patrons. And he experienced his first artistic breakthrough in 1632 with the anatomical lesson of Dr. Nicholas Tulp. 2 years later, in 1634, he was commissioned to immortalize the wealthy high society couple Martin Solmans and Opium Coppit. In this episode, I will tell you about these paintings. Anatomical lesson of Dr. Nicholas Tulp, and the two life-size portraits of Martin and Opium. I think they represent two specific phenomena in 17th century Amsterdam. Dr. Tulp's painting depicts the urban organization of trade, industry and services, shaped in the guild system. Martin and Opium symbolize the specific clientele for artists in Amsterdam. They belonged to the higher echelons of society, not the clergy or the nobility, but the wealthy merchants, even better, the new rich, that did not work themselves, but lived from the money earned by their forefathers. A guild is a kind of professional association for all kinds of professions, including brewers, carpenters, shoemakers and bakers. More than 10 such professions were painted as so-called guild pieces. Most guilds of merchants, craftsmen and other traders wanted vanity of vanities to be depicted together. For example, on the occasion of the establishment of a new board of the guild, or to mark a specific celebration. Rates for such paintings for these groups are usually unknown. Although, in 1617, the Amsterdam painter Cornelis van der Voort charged 50 guilders per person depicted. The framemaker received 3 guilders per person. As a young Leiden resident, Rembrandt was most likely familiar with an anatomy lesson. Accompany me to the academy building of my former university in Leiden. In 1590, 1590, the famous Clusius built a botanical garden right behind this building, the Hortus Botanicus. World famous in no time. Do you want to go to the other side of the canal? Then you cross the Nonnenbrug or the Nuns Bridge that connects the Nonnensteeg alley and the Kloksteeg, another alley. At the Academy building, you cross the Rapenburg. In 1594, there was founded on the other side of the Academy building an anatomical theater. Amsterdam did not have such a theater until 100 years later, in 1691. Leiden's Theatrum Anatomicum was an important 17th century tourist attraction, depicted in various prints and drawings, described in books and celebrated in many travelogues. When he depicted the anatomical lesson of Dr. Nicholas Telp in 1632, Rembrandt must have had the anatomical theatre in Leiden in mind. The anatomy lesson of Telp was Rembrandt's first group portrait. Signed and dated Rembrandt F.T., made in 1632. This is a special date. According to art historians, Rembrandt was born on 15 July 1606. Others suggest Rembrandt's date of birth as 15 July 1605 or even 15 July 1607. One argument is that the anatomy lesson of Dr. Nicholas Telp dates from January 1632. Rembrandt signs with age and date, A.E.T. 24 anno 1631. A.E.T. means etatis suae, or at the age of 24. Whatever, in my book, I just leave his date of birth as 15 July 1606. Who is Dr. Telp? Dr. Telp, a tulip is a tulip, is central in the portrait. He is in front of the other surgeons. They focus on his explanation of a dissection. Dr. Nicholas Telp was born in 1593. That was in Amsterdam on the Nieuwe Dijk. He was born as Klaas Pieters. About 18 years old, he left in 1611 for Leiden to study medicine. He returned in 1614 as a qualified doctor. He graduated under the name of Nicolaus Petreus, Latinized his Dutch name, on a thesis on De cholera humidia. Okay, all fine. He settled as a doctor in Amsterdam. In 1628, he was in his mid-30s and appointed as the public anatomist of the Amsterdam Guild of Surgeons. He later became mayor of Amsterdam 4 times. He was a mayor when the new Amsterdam Town Hall was completed between 1654 and 1656. Since some 2 centuries, this town hall is the Royal Palace on Dam Square in Amsterdam. Dr. Telp lived on the Keizersgracht, one of the canals in Amsterdam, until his death in 1674. In my blog on the website rembrandtsmoney.com, I will tell you more about the important role that Telp has played in the pharmaceutical world. In each anatomy piece, you see a central motive, a lesson in autonomy, and a main character, the prelector or reader. In this case, it is Dr. Telp. Telp was city anatomist of the Amsterdam's Surgeons Guild. This guild performed anatomy on the bodies of criminals. The corpse depicted in 1632 belonged to Aris Kins. He was 20 years old at the time. He was sentenced to death for an armed robbery, stealing a cloak. That's quite something. the death penalty for stealing a coat without sleeves. Of the seven surgeons immortalized here, five appear in the tax archives of 1631, in Dutch de Kohier. Their estimated wealth is between 2,000 and 6,000 guilders. Dr. Tulp is listed in the same archives with an estimated fortune of 40,000 guilders. In addition to surgeons, hairdressers also belong to the same guild. The person Frans Barbier is taxed for 1,000 guilders. It is actually Frans Jacob's zoon van Loenen. You can see him at the very top of the painting. Frans looks at you to involve you as a spectator in a medical analysis. Fascinating, a hairdresser among surgeons. In these days, anatomy lessons were social events in real theaters. Students and the public paid to be there. The weighing house, or the waag, was used as a theater between 1619 and 1639. In addition to a small anatomy theater, it was also used as a guild room with furniture, art, and medical instruments. The anatomy lectures, including dissections, were usually held in winter. Without cold temperatures, a body started to smell. Experimenting, dissecting, and discussions sometimes lasted several days. Rembrandt paints a seemingly spontaneous moment here. Make no mistake, this careful composition has been very carefully considered in advance. Dr. Tulp's activity attracts the attention. Obviously, he is the star. He explains how the muscles of the arm work, bending and stretching. The corpse arm is open. Medical specialists around the world have criticized the anatomical representation and discovered at least seven anatomical discrepancies. Other critics believe the performance does not correspond to reality. For example, you don't see any actual dissection here. Do you really see here an anatomy theater? Where are the dissection instruments? We see no blood. And there is no assisting medical staff, i.e. the person who prepared the body for the lesson is missing. Finally, something is missing from the body. Where were the signs that the man was hanged? Ariskin's right hand was cut off, but it was added to the painting. This is paint shopping avant la lettre. All in all, a nice imagination, but quite sterile. In any case, the stench of decay does not sting in my nose, as Benjamin Moser seems to experience according to his recent book, The Upside Down World Meeting with the Dutch Masters. Painting a full-length person was an artistic innovation in Rembrandt's time, a rare type of citizen portraits with which Rembrandt brought Martin Solmans and Opium Coppet to their full height and glory. Rembrandt portrayed both a year after their spectacular wedding. Opium was a wealthy daughter from a traditional and established Amsterdam Regent family, who married the son of a Flemish migrant. In other words, a war refugee. Was Rembrandt an early paparazzi photographer? In 2016, the Rothschild family sold both portraits to the Netherlands and France. This joint purchase provides a varied exhibition in the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam and the Musée du Louvre. You can admire both paintings in the Louvre in Paris as from January 2024. Martin and Opium represent a new rich generation. rich through inherited fortune without earning it themselves. Rembrandt probably received 1,000 guilders for these two portraits. Remarkably, Rembrandt signed Martin's portrait and not Oppian's. Yet no one doubts the authenticity of that last painting. Martin Solmans was the son of Jan Solmans. Before the siege of Antwerp, the Solmans family fled to Amsterdam with many other Flemish families. This siege lasted 14 months during the 80 Years' War. It ended around 1584 or 5 with the fall of Antwerp. Solmans Sr. was a sugar trader. He started as a sugar and later also pepper importer and later founded a sugar refinery in Amsterdam. The family lived on the Chic Keizersgracht. Father Jan had a rough character and appeared before the church council more than 80 times for fights, swearing and domestic violence. Oppian's grandfather made a fortune trading grain and gunpowder. Oppian was the beauty ideal of the 17th century. Very white skin, fluffy hair and a high forehead. She received 35,000 guilders as a dowry. Almost three times as much Rembrandt paid 5 years later for his very large house and studio. And that was already considered a very large amount back then. Martin contributed to the marriage 12,000 guilders. On 9 June 1633, Martin and Oppian entered into notice of marriage or betrothal in Leiden. Martin, a young man from Amsterdam who lived on the Rapenburg in Leiden, and Oppian, a young daughter from Amsterdam where she lived with her parents. Martin was 20 and Oppian 22 years old. Martin did quit his Leiden law studies. They married on 28 June 1633 in Amsterdam. Martin and Oppian had three children, Hendrik, 1634, Jan, 1636, and Cornelia, 1637. After the wedding, Martin moved in with Oppian and her family, and soon Oppian was pregnant with their first child. Sadly, little Hendrik died before he was 1 year old, and his sister Cornelia also died. In the 17th century, there was a lot of infant and child mortality. About half of all children born did not reach the age of 18. Parents realized the high probability that a child would die before it was 1 year old. In 2023, the Heritage Leiden and Surroundings Center discovered in a Leiden notarial archive the will of Martin and Oppian. A will, 24 April 1634. The same year in which Rembrandt painted their portraits and the year in which their first child was born. The will states that Martin and Oppian lived in Leiden at the Rapenburg near the Nonnenbrug, the Nun's Bridge, at the time. Remember what I told you about the Nun's Bridge earlier? Only later, the couple moved to Amsterdam. Their first child, Hendrik, was born there on 25 August 1634. Rembrandt painted the two portraits, counterpart or companion pieces, in his unique style. These are the only life-size portraits, standing and in full length, that he ever made. Why was Rembrandt chosen as the painter? We do not know. Rembrandt and Martin, however, may have known each other. Martin studied in Leiden from 1628 to 1631. When Rembrandt also lived and worked in Leiden. The Wettestraat, where Rembrandt stayed, and the Nun's Bridge, walking distance less than 1,000 meters apart, which is around half a mile. Martin and Opium most likely lived on the corner of what now is Kloksteeg 2A, the Café Barrera. Another possibility is that Father Solmans may have known Hendrik Uilenburg. The Solmans family lived in Amsterdam on the Nieuwe Hoogstraat, which is not far away from the Breestraat, where Rembrandt was staying with the art dealer Hendrik Uilenburg. The marriage of Martin and Opium lasted short. 8 years later, Martin died in 1641. He only saw his second son, Jan, from 1636, grow up for a few years. Opium remarried and died in Alkmaar at the age of 78, 50 years older than her first husband, Martin. We come to a close. We've experienced guilt and glamour. In 1632, Rembrandt made his artistic breakthrough with the Surgeon's Guild painting, The Anatomical Lesson of Dr. Nicholas Telp, and with glamour. We saw the second artistic innovation in 1634 with his full-length complete painting of two people. The paintings depict the organization of the economy at the time of guilds and the representatives of the prosperous Amsterdam high society. Looking behind the reproduction, we see that Dr. Telp had a considerable impact on the local government of Amsterdam and on the developments of pharmaceutical treatments. In the 1630s, Martin and Opium benefited from the wealth of previous generations of their families. Martin's clothing enchanted your eyes. A suit of shiny black silk and ostentatious silver decorations, rosettes on his beautiful shoes. The latest fashion trends decorated with objects that are guaranteed to make you fall over. It is also a personal and sad story. Two children who died very young, and also the unfortunate Martin, who did not yet live to be 30 years old. And what about Opium, whose life continued for decades with her second husband? In which heritage center can reveal more about her? I'll find it fascinating that there is an imaginary connection between the two works of art via the Nuns Bridge in Leiden. And, my dear listener, you're the only one who knows that. That's it for this time. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Would you like to know more about this story? There's an extended version on this story on my website, rembrandtsmoney.com, as an addendum to this podcast entitled Guilds and Glamour. In the next episode, I will talk about Uilenburg's personal impact on the life of Rembrandt, who introduced him to his cousin, Saskia Uilenburg, the daughter of the mayor of Leeuwarden. Who was she? Were they really in love? Or was it a marriage of convenience? Anyway, yet another compelling and fascinating Rembrandt story.